It's number one. It's top of the charts. Yes, it's top of the charts, bringing you up-to-the-minute hits and brand-new sounds introduced by disc jockeys that are old favorites. Very, very old, old favorites. And here's this week's number one DJ making his 1 millionth broadcast. It's Pete Freeman, OBE.
Thank you. And straight on with our first gramophone record. thank you, nurse. Here is the record, guys and gals. So blow your minds and let it all go hang. It's...
Yes, Radio Prune is on the air, bringing you the nation's number one and only full-frontal commercial radio station. And here's this week's special offer, the new improved I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again, containing Tim Brooke Taylor, John Cleese, Graham Garden, David Hatch, Joe Kendall, with added Bill Oddie.
We asked average listeners if they'd swap their packet of I'm Sorry I'll Read That Again for two packets of other top-price leading comedy shows. And we found their answer was always the same.
So stay tuned for the Navy Lark and the news in Welsh.
The sound of sensation and throws an elation. This is Radio Prune.
Bum.
Our next program, which follows in a few moments, follows in a few moments.
Meanwhile, here is a short message from the chairman of Radio Prune.
Hello to you all out there in Prune Land. As you may know, Radio Prune has run into financial difficulties. And with jokes like that, you can see why. However, we are having trouble over staff shortages, since so many of our broadcasting personalities are going into television or retiring or quite simply falling over. Many of our top disc jockeys have been lured away by the easy money they can get on the old age pension. However, we shall still try to bring you the very best in full frontal radio, and I hope you'll bear with us.
And now here is our next program, Countrywide, the radio magazine featuring reports from all over the country, introduced by Michael Barrack.
Hello, Michael Barrack here. The big news today is the staff shortage at Radio Prune. For a report, over to Ralph Sunshine in Edinburgh. Well, owing to the staff shortage, we don't seem to have anybody in Edinburgh, so I'll just have to carry on by myself. Oh, stuff it.
And now, here is an announcement. Owing to the crisis, many of our programs have had to cut down on performers. Later today, you can hear Not in Front of the Child, Steptoe and Horse, and The Archer. The Jimmy Clitheroe show will go on as usual. And on and on and on. And now, here is the news summary read by Eddie Waring.
Well, today's big news is the Prime Minister's tour of the North of England. Today he was visiting Hunslet on St. Helens, and he's quite a lad, is our Prime Minister. He used to live in Huddersfield, and I was quite in the bit of a rugby league. And speaking of that, I'll see Hawkinson Rovers as well against Wigan. Will he? I can't get any time before I've time. He takes some stuff in as well. It occurs to me with three of our St. Helens who beat Featherstone Rovers, and Halifax had a good fight against Rochdale Hornets, and that's all you get in. So back into the studio.
And you can hear Eddie Waring, OBE, later tonight, giving a short piano recital from the public bar of the Wounded Gibbon. And now, Radio Prune continues with a short commercial break.
Oh, dear, look at this mess. John's parents are coming round for supper, and the drama group will be here at any moment. We're having a children's party, and the band of the Irish Guards are dropping in. And the Queen said she'd arrive not later than six. Oh, what am I going to do? This floor's such a mess. I'll never get it finished in time.
Oh, can I surprise? Using all those messy suds.
Who are you?
Never mind, just give me that mop now. Sprinkle fairy puff all over the floor.
Fairy puff?
It gets the cleaning done in quarter the time. There we are, all over the floor. And it's up the walls and into the fridge and all over the chairs. Now throw this bucket of water all over the room.
Stop it.
And take some more fairy puff and stuff it up your nostrils. And no messing.
All right, I warned you.
Yes, next time a nosy old busybody comes in and fouls up your housework, try a Westminster submachine gun. So kind, your hands.
Excuse me one moment. That was a commercial.
Well, this is a commercial radio station.
Well, you can't have commercials on Radio Prune. I mean, dash it all. What are the listeners going to think?
Well, just take a look at these letters that have been pouring in.
Listeners' letters.
Director General, hats off to the BBC for the black and white minstrels, Val Doonigan and Songs of Praise. What lovely melodies and what worthwhile entertainment. Let's have more of this, please. Yours faithfully, Charity Ball Miss, B.S. May we also have more nude men in rubber boots?
Dear Director General, as a regular radio listener, I feel I must protest most strongly as often as possible. Yours sincerely, Brigadier General Titfield Thunderbolt, MC, GPO, PVC, DSO, and Looney.
Mein lieber Herr Oberdirektor General, mit den britischen Broadcaster Radio schon Gesellschaft der Telefunkenkooperation gespielt. On behalf of the overseas listeners, ich muss be complaining about the puzzling references in so many of your program Gesprüssen, which have no meanings for us ignorant foreign chaps, you sneaky British swine. Who is the Rolf Harris and the mysterious Inune Wien? Please to explain so that we may have a good laugh with the hoo-hoo-hoo and the chucklings, which I like. Who says we have no sense of humor, baby? Yours faithfully, Abdul Ramjit Singh, your B.E.
Dear Director General, please, oh, please bring back that marvelous program, Listen to This Space. Yours sincerely, Nicholas Parsons. John Smith. Ooh, what a giveaway.
There you are, you see. That's what the listeners think about my scheme.
But none of them even mentioned commercial radio.
You see, they haven't even noticed.
Now, look out. If we put adverts on radio, that'll make people go out and buy things, and if they're out shopping, they won't be at home listening to the radio. Put ourselves together, let's give the listeners what they really want to hear. One of those popular, never-ending serials that go on and on and on and on.
Continuing saga of Mrs. Forsyth's Ambridge newcomers to Coronation Place Crossroads. Jenny has confided to Phil the part she played in Granny Grove's mysterious accident in the strip club, while Giuseppe has been cleared of the manslaughter of his wife's lover's hairdresser's gibbon. Alice, returning home after a hard day's work annoying chickens, surprises her husband in the bedroom with Attila the Hun. Meanwhile, Jerry, the ex-son of Giuseppe's wife's lover's hairdresser's gibbons, friend the lumberjack cousin of Granny Grove's second husband, Deborah, has paid a surprise visit to Annette, the estranged wife of Attila the Hun, and one-time nurse to old Martin Forsyth's ex-chauffeur's uncle, Giuseppe's wife's lover's hairdresser's Gibbon. They decide to sort things out between them once and for all.
Jerry, I...
Don't say anything, darling.
Next week, there's a surprise in store for Giuseppe's wife's lover's hairdresser's Gibbon.
Oh, Granny... shut up.
No. Having a party? Give your friends a drink to remember.
I say, this wine's very good. What did you say its name was?
El Tarantula Cypress Style, full-bodied Algerian red-colored tonic wine. El Tarantula.
I'll certainly remember that name. What is it again?
El Tarantula.
El Tarantula. Cheers, everybody.
El Tarantula.
Remember the name. Patterson's Nail Varnish.
Right, I'm frankly sorry, but that does it. I did warn you about advertising, but now I'm afraid we shall have to take this matter to court.
Silence in court.
Scene, the Central Criminal Court, Wimbledon. The case, Regina versus Pruden. The presiding judge, Justice Watts.
Chairman of Radio Pruden.
Right? Yes, I am.
Oh, well, you will be taken from this place to a place of execution where you will be hanged.
No,
by...
no, my lad. I think you're a little confused.
Hey, you mean this isn't a parking offence?
No, my lad. The defendants, Radio Pruden, are accused already of illegally broadcasting advertising material and slipping in commercials when nobody would notice.
Slipping commercials? Disgraceful. That reminds me of the case of Regina versus Copplestone's frozen sausage balls.
Copplestone's frozen sausage balls, my lord?
Yes, Copplestone. You know, tangy, zesty sausage meat in mouth-watering chunks, a meal in itself. Get some today.
Quite so, my lad, if I may continue.
Yeah, by all means, but don't forget your Copplestone's frozen sausage balls. They're bursting with goodness. Continue, carry on you go.
Thank you, my lad, already. Radio Pruden has persistently and willfully been broadcasting commercials and managing to drag them in at every conceivable opportunity.
My lad, I object. I should like to point out that my clients have not been proved guilty of these charges, and that dull, dry, lackluster hair can take on a new life with McGregor's oatmeal shampoo.
My lad, I object.
So do I. If you want to treat your hair to the tonic it needs, try Xenocell, the shampoo with a twinkle. Objection sustained. Continue with the defense.
Thank you, my lad. The facts, quite simply, are these. Scientific tests have shown that regular soaking in cleaner dent makes dentures spark.
I object, my lad. Something is very wrong in this courtroom. Why does my learned friend get all your attention, my lad? You never seem to notice me.
B.O.
Here, what you need is Pugon deodorant spray.
Let Pugon spray away your worries.
You're fresh. You're fresh, and you stay fresh all day. Your underarm is full of charm with a Pugon deodorant spray. Hey, hey, a Pugon deodorant spray. Boom.
My lad!
Shut up! Case dismissed. Before my next case, the gentleman of the bench and I will entertain you with a little song.
Oh, no.
No, no.
Oh,
no.
And now, by public demand, we have a surprise guest appearance by one of Britain's most popular singing groups, the Confirmed Bachelors. OBE, OBE, and Dame of the British Empire. And here they are with their latest hit, a beautiful quiet ballad sung in their very own sincere, moving, inimitable style. It's called Silence, and it's sung by the Confirmed Bachelors.
Oh, hush, all around me there is silence. Oh, hush, not a sound is there to hear. In the silence, a lonely silence that surrounds me, can you no longer hear? As I sit here in the silence, now that I am all alone,
I'm all alone.
I'm on my own.
I'm on my own.
Oh, hush! All around me there is silence. Oh, hush! Since you left me behind. darkness and the quiet. I can hear not a word.
Like the music of Dave Lee, Dozy, Sneaky, Thick, and Rich. No, seriously, Dave, that was really dreadful. Just the sort of thing we like, an opportunity knocks. Now, ladies and gentlemen, we have for you yet another prune play of the week. Isn't that marvelous? Prune play of the week. Then we have tonight's author, please.
Certainly, David. Tonight's author is Mrs. Aminta Gibbonluffer. And this is her first play.
Her first play? Well, isn't it absolutely marvelous? I want you all to encourage her. So let's hear it. Mrs. Aminta Gibbonluffer's first play. Can we have a small hand, please? Thank you very much.
This is the story of a technological and engineering feat to rank with the mightiest in history. The building of the pyramids, the blasting of the Khyber Pass, the widening of the Finchley Road. None of these are as great a testimony to man's triumph over the impossible as this saga of a band of stubborn and principled men dedicated to resisting the relentless march of progress, the GPO. Men devoted to an age-old motto.
Sorry, it can't be done.
And this is the tale of one rash and courageous woman who defied them and would not take no for an answer.
All right, then, how about not bleeding lightly?
It all began way back in the year 1910 in a seedy garret somewhere in Mayfair. A little child was kneeling beside a bedside, listening to the last words of her dying grandfather, who was going fast.
Oh, sorry, oh, granddaughter. Child, I'm going to give you something very precious. It's been handed down through our family for many, many years. Here, it's an application to have a telephone installed.
But, Grandfather, it's dated 1702.
Yes, well, the waiting list's so long, you had to apply for a phone 200 years before it was invented. Now, promise me you'll make sure this old garret will know the cheerful bring, bring of a telephone before another generation is brought into the world to suffer as I have done.
I promise, Grandfather. I swear I shall not marry till a telephone is installed in 18 Pussycat Mews.
Then I die a happy man. Oh!
In July 1910, the child posted her letter of application for a telephone. She was told that there would inevitably be the usual waiting period, but she was given a definite installation date. But the date came and went, and 2 days later, in March 1967... She wrote to the Postmaster General, this time in a registered envelope. In accordance with Post Office official procedure, the postman took the registered envelope to the wrong address. Knocked 3 times and ran away before anyone could open the door. It was then marked return to sender. And within less than a year, an office boy had officially ignored it. But at last came that historic day in the spring of 1969. The top men of the GPO were assembled for a board meeting.
Board! On board!
Suddenly, the chairman took to his feet.
Oh, what nice feet I run.
He He picked up his notes.
Me.
And the meeting knew from his first words that he was going to say something important.
I'm going to say something important. Something important.
Well done!
Now, here are some new statistics on GPO recruiting. For start, let's just have a look at the Switch Girls figures. Lovely. But now, gentlemen, I must inform you that we have a job to do more challenging than anything we've ever done before. This is more time-consuming than blocking up the threepenny slots in the phone boxes. Gentlemen, there comes a time when a man has to do what he has to do. When he must go forward, never looking back, without beating about the carpet or evading the customs, weighing up the pros and verse, throwing caution to the lions, putting his best foot forward, come rain, come dancing, for better or for worse, not mincing meat, telling it like it is, doing his thing, come what may. Need I say more?
Yes.
Very well. We have been asked to install a telephone at 18 Pussycat Mews.
So that night, two men set out, and armed only with a screwdriver, they approached 18 Pussycat Mews. Fearlessly, they strode past the old tomcat in the yard, and without a care for their safety, they knocked on the door with their muffled gloves and hid behind the dustbins. The figure who opened the door was no longer recognizable as the little child who had knelt by her father's deathbed 60 years ago. But 'twas she, and now she was an old woman. Her face showed the marks of time.
Cool, what clock!
Constance the Coverlet, the well-known frustrated spinster without a phone. But who's that crouching behind my dustbins? Is it two sinister men? Or is that just wishful thinking?
Hey, telephone engineers!
Where do you want us to put it?
Oh, silly question. I'm not awfully bothered. Put the telephone wherever you like. Yeah.
Now, if green is earth, mm-hmm, and black is neutral, mm-hmm, red must be... No, don't worry. It's all right. You can't be electrocuted with rubber-soled shoes.
No, but you can be kicked to death.
Move on.
So, having joined the wire, yes, to a rubber-soled shoe...
Rubber-soled shoe.
We now connect it up to the socket.
Connect to the socket?
Well, there's one.
No, no, that's a plug.
No, no, it's a socket.
No, it may be plugged to you, but it's a socket to me.
Oh! That jet was imported at great embarrassment from Vern and Martin's Larfield.
Is my telephone working yet?
Well, we've done the wiring, yes, but before we actually put in the phone, we'd like you to meet this man riding on a bicycle wheel.
A bicycle wheel?
Yes, he's a spokesman.
And that's a new record. That's got 92 on the old boometer. That really was marvellous.
He'll explain to you how the old system works.
Now, first of all, you must have a telephone number, and you must remember it off by heart.
That's right, remember it off by heart. Now, yours is going to be London 123.
Oh, that's nice and easy to remember.
Great, so we changed it to 346-1290, 254-316-403030, and an off. Now, about this film, I'm afraid we can only guarantee that 35% of calls made to you will get through to your correct number. But for an extra charge, we can give you a wrong number, and 65% of the calls should then get through. And remember, the cheapest time to phone your friends is when they're out.
We can also supply you with an answering service with a whole variety of recorded messages. For example, this is a good one.
Hello. I'm sorry there's no one in to take your call, but if that's Jimmy Young...
There's lots of other services what we provide.
You can dial to send a telegram, which is very useful when your phone's broken down.
Think about... Now, what shape of phone would you like?
Oh, give me a nice, sexy one.
Well, this is probably the most satisfying, with a moulded handle which allows you to slam it down a temper without squashing your fingers. Or your toes, if you're clever. It's completely indestructible.
And we do provide a spare rubber telephone for leaping up and down on.
Splendid, I'll take two of each, and tomorrow I shall make my first phone call.
The next day, the opening ceremony attracted a big crowd. Unfortunately, amongst it was an undesirable element. A group of toughs in old-fashioned clothes with short-cropped hair and big boots on.
Policemen.
Boom, one in a row. But they were kept... They were kept under control by a small band of Hell's Angels. The Postmaster General presented the two engineers with awards for their gallantry.
To you, I give this valuable second-hand OBE with I Love Yoko and a naughty picture scratched on the back. And to you, I give this copy of the Buckingham Palace cookbook, featuring 101 ways to cook ceremonial horses.
Then Lady Constance appeared. She was dressed to kill. Five men looked at her and committed suicide. She strode forward and bit through the traditional white gibbon. Then she smashed a bottle of champagne on the new telephone, fused the whole of North London's electricity supply, and the post office tower took off and made a soft landing in the Sea of Tranquility.
Ladies and gentlemen, it gives me great pleasure, and I hope it always will. 60 years ago, when I was Joe Kendall, OBE, I promised that I would not marry until the day my telephone was installed. The day has arrived. So I shall make a randy call and... No. I shall make a random call. No, I'll make a randy call. And the first man to answer shall be my husband.
And so she dialed.
Yeah, there's water coming out of the phone.
Oh, it's being tapped.
Oh. Is it?
No, I'm sorry. We must have got the wires crossed with the washing machine. At least you won't get any dirty phone calls.
Those are the only ones I want.
Tell you what I'll do. I'll connect it up to the cooker. Then it'll be a hotline. Oh,
that's more like it. Now let's try again. The first man who answers shall be my husband.
Hello, this is Jim here, and I'm going to be leaping about. BASTDBFOBEISTIRTA. I'm sorry, I'll read that again.
You have been listening to an anonymous phone call by Timbrook Taylor, OBE, John Cleese, OBE, Graham Garden, OBE, David Hatch, OBE, Joe Kendall, OBE, and Bill Oddie. Heavy Breathing and production was by David Hatch and Peter Titheridge, OBE. The yellow pages and the blue jokes were provided by Graham Garden and Bill Oddie, OBE. Graham Garden wrote the song, which was a completely wrong number. The tune was called by Dave Lee, OBE, who's a very smooth operator. And the music was arranged by Leon Curran, who hasn't got a joke. Next week, once again, we'll be whispering these words into your mouthpiece.
This one, sorry, I'll read it again, OBE, again, OBE.
My name is Angus Bruce, and I always think you're sorry, I'll